This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hi, this is Jane Garvey. It's Woman's Hour on Bank Holiday Monday, the 25th of May, 2020. Good morning. A live edition of the programme for a Bank Holiday Monday. Hope you're feeling all right this morning. Pregnancy, birth and life with a newborn during the lockdown. That's the subject of Women's Hour today. And you can take part, particularly if this is you right now or somebody in your family, somebody you care about, at BBC Women's Hour on Twitter, or you can email the programme via our website, bbc.co.uk/womenshour. We're on Instagram too, at BBC Women's Hour. As you can imagine, so much from you already on Instagram, on Twitter, and some fantastic emails and listeners' experiences. Expert advice too. My guests are the obstetrician Kenga Sivaraja, who's from King's College Hospital in London. She is a specialist in perinatal mental health. And the midwife Leah Hazard is based at a hospital in Glasgow. She's written a really good book about being a midwife. It's called Hard Pushed. If you'd like to seek that out, I can recommend it. Kenga, first of all, good morning to you. First of all, can you reassure anybody who's pregnant now that everything is going to be well handled and that they'll be in safe hands?
Hi, good morning, Jane. Yes, so I think the messages are coming through from the UK obstetric surveillance study that there isn't any evidence that pregnant women are more likely to get COVID-19 than anyone else. And that most pregnant women who get COVID-19 will have mild to moderate symptoms. However, we do know the body can respond differently to viruses in pregnancy. And occasionally, pregnant women may suffer from more severe symptoms. And this may be the same for COVID-19. And for this reason, we would say, we would follow the government advice that pregnant women, practice stringent social distancing from 28 weeks. But for our part in maternity, we are trying as much as possible to continue antenatal and postnatal care.
Right. In the normal way, or is it all online?
So it's not all online. We have definitely adapted some of our antenatal and postnatal care to ensure that women can practice the stringent social distancing if they need to. But we also want to have a clear message that if women have antenatal symptoms or postnatal symptoms that, would usually require them to come into hospital, that they seek help. Firstly, by maternity helplines, seeking help from their midwife, their obstetrician, but to come into hospital if they need to, and not to wait at home because they're worried about catching COVID-19 in hospital.
What would you like to say to BAME women at this time?
We do have some data from the same study that over half of the pregnant women that were admitted to hospital with coronavirus were from a BAME background. And obviously this does concern us. And from a health professional point of view, we would say that we should be aware of this increased risk and, you know, possibly have lower thresholds for reviewing and admitting them. But also to empower these women in particular, that if they do have severe symptoms or feel unwell, or their, you know, recovery is particularly prolonged, then please to, you know, contact one of the maternity team or to come in.
Thank you very much. Much more from Kenga later. Kenga is in London. Our midwife, Leah, works in Glasgow. How are things at the hospital? Is it a particularly busy time, Leah?
Well, that's really interesting. At the start of all this, we didn't quite know what to expect. I don't think anybody did. And I have to say, for the first couple of weeks of lockdown, our levels of women coming through the triage department where I work were greatly reduced. And it was a bit eerie because we were kind of expecting this big tsunami of sick women. And it was very, very quiet. And we thought, OK, you know, maybe this is just women using the service a bit more cautiously. And hopefully women aren't staying at home when they should be presenting with issues. But now I can definitely say that our workload is right up to normal levels of busyness, which is quite busy indeed. And we have seen some sick women in amongst those numbers, but I'm pleased to say that we haven't been seeing them in the numbers that we were fearing.
Right, but you have seen pregnant women with COVID?
I have, yes.
And how does it manifest itself in pregnant women? Is it just the same?
Well, I think on the whole, yes, I think pregnant women should be aware of the same symptoms that the rest of us have been told to look out for. So most notably, that's cough, shortness of breath, fever, loss of taste or smell. And pregnant women, as Kenga has said, can experience those symptoms, and sometimes they can experience them in greater acuity than the general population might. So, yeah, I mean, you can feel a bit sort of tired and run down in pregnancy at the best of times anyway. And pregnant women who are unwell, you know, have that in spades, I'm afraid.
We hope to get so much more from you both during the course of the programme. But for the time being, thank you very much. Let's talk then to two women who are in that now vulnerable group because they're pregnant. You are in the vulnerable group from 28 weeks. That's the third trimester of pregnancy. And as Kenga pointed out right at the start, you should self-isolate at this point as far as is possible. Elsa joins us from Nottinghamshire. Elsa, first of all, congratulations. Your first baby is due in a couple of weeks, the 6th of June. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'm doing all right. I'm just tired mainly now. But other than that, I'm feeling pretty good.
And all right. When you first realised you were pregnant, of course, it must seem like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Long before lockdown. So you weren't expecting all this?
No. No, it's gone. It's strange because the pregnancy feels like it's gone really fast, but then we feel like we've been in this sort of pandemic situation for a little while now, which is, I guess, slowing it down a little bit. It feels strange.
What would you say about the antenatal care you've been able to have?
So I'm still able to see my midwife face to face, which is really nice. I'm really glad about that. It's just a bit different in terms of, you know, going to the surgery. You wait outside and only one person's allowed in at a time. You wait to be called. But we weren't able to do any antenatal classes the ones we were planning on doing. But I was able to do one over Zoom, which was actually really good.
And so do you feel you've made connections with other women in the same situation?
A bit, because I think there's a lot online, you know, like Facebook groups and Instagram things that you can join. It's not the same as meeting people face to face, but it does help to hear from other women going through the same thing.
And the birth, what plans had you made?
What, like, you mean in terms of like a birth plan?
Yes.
We hadn't really thought about that too much before the virus, I don't think, other than just go to the hospital and hopefully be guided through it.
And what do you know about what will happen when the birth happens? Will your partner be able to be with you?
At the moment, from what we've been told, yeah, he will be. We've just been told to ring the hospital when we get the signs of labour. And once I'm in active labour, that's when I'll go to hospital and he can stay with me then.
Great. OK, well, thank you very much for that. Ibby is in Northampton. Ibby, you're 25 weeks pregnant. It's your second baby. You already have a 5-year-old, and I know you've been doing homeschooling, but you also have I'm going to get this right, hyperemesis gravidarum, HG, which is that awful vomiting and sickness ailment. What's it been like for you?
So it actually started for me. It was the reason that I actually found out that I was pregnant, because I was really, really ill. And it's been really horrible, because I found out I started having the symptoms around 6 weeks of pregnancy, and it's carried on till now, till date. It is getting a lot better in terms of, I think, the medication that I'm on now, it seems to be not leveling it out, but just helping me go by day-to-day things. Because before, I couldn't get out of bed, I couldn't do anything. It was almost like I was just a zombie. I couldn't do anything. And with a five-year-old, it's a lot harder, because she's like, "Mommy, you need to come and do this, Mommy." And especially now with homeschooling, it's been a lot more difficult. We're trying to get up, you know, early in the morning, and try to get our school routine going without me, you know, being sick and me feeling sick. But I feel like I am getting there. I am getting there. I can't wait for it to be over, which is not what pregnancy should feel like. But I think with the HG, it's just kind of made me want to just get over it quickly.
And what about the lockdown and the impact of that?
I think for me, I was very, before I actually went into the hospital too, cause this is the thing now, with the HG, I do have frequent trips to the hospital where I have to go and get fluids and, you know, for rehydration. Before that, I was really, really not happy to do it, because I was really scared with all the coronavirus and everything going on. It took me about a month and a half before I actually passed out, and then my partner forced me, like, okay, at this point, we're going to call the ambulance, let's get, and then I realised that, oh, I'd left it a little bit too late. You know, I started having ketones in my urine, which is a bit dangerous.
Right.
So it took it. I think in terms of that was the coronavirus that affected my mindset, because I just didn't want to go into the hospital and put myself more at risk.
Well, you yourself, you were a nurse.
And also I think being a nurse, I think it's also kind of made me a little bit, not skeptical, but a little bit scared more, because I was, you know, in the group chats. Because I work in the same hospital where I'm going to get my hydration and things.
Right. Okay. You almost know too much. You mean?
I know too much. Yeah. So I was knowing like the rate people that were in with COVID-19 and things like that. So I was a bit like, oh dear, do I want to go in today, and or do I not? I was trying to brave it, but eventually I didn't really have a choice, because it really got to the point where I wasn't eating, and you know, I was losing a lot of weight. I lost I lost about 10 kilograms. In this whole pregnancy, that's not a good thing.
No, 10 kilograms when you're pregnant, unbelievable.
I lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. That does sound remarkably tough. And as you're a woman of colour, what Kenga had to say about BAME women, does that also add an additional layer of concern?
Yeah, I think it also adds anxiety to the mixture, just because I'm more anxious, because I know that, it seems like a lot of our community seems to be getting this COVID-19, so I need to be a lot more safer. And you know, it's affecting sort of like my family life as well, because of that, I'm keeping away from a lot of people. Even my husband, he's a key worker as well, so he's actually had to move out of our house for the time being, just because you know, he doesn't want to put me at risk.
No, I understand
it is quite hard doing that. So doing that, as well as homeschooling a five-year-old and doing everything for her, it has been a kind of a juggle. But I think, you know, I feel like this COVID-19 has made it a lot harder for a lot of... it's made it just a bit more difficult just to do your normal day-to-day things, I think.
I think, Ibi, you're fantastically understating the whole thing, to be honest with you. I should have said congratulations to you as well. It is a wonderful thing. And
it is a wonderful thing, it is.
Yeah, and we do wish you all the very best. Thank you for talking to us this morning. I mentioned that we'd had loads of emails on this, and here's one listener who says, "I just feel cheated of the normal pregnancy experience. Everybody tells you it's a special time, particularly your first pregnancy. Everything you read about is how special you feel and how exciting it is. Well, I haven't felt that at all. I cycle through feeling really lucky I'm having a healthy pregnancy and that our jobs are okay, but sometimes I feel really angry that this has happened now and I'm spending my pregnancy locked up at home. My husband couldn't come to our 20-week scan, and that was upsetting as I was nervous about it beforehand. Another listener who's pregnant with twins says hospital appointments have been stressful, but the staff are brilliant, friendly and supportive and professional. I had my first scan at 9 weeks, I thought it was 12 weeks, and to see two babies in there without my husband made me an emotional wreck. The sonographer was superb and really understanding, but it's definitely weird to break that news to your husband via WhatsApp. I was much calmer at my second scan this week, and the PPE doesn't put me off attending the hospital. I figure it's probably one of the cleanest places going. I certainly feel safer in there than I do in my local Tesco. That's no slight on Tesco, by the way, because I'm sure they're doing their very best. Thank you for that. Kenga, what would you say to those women who are just frankly somewhat concerned about how alien the hospital environment is going to be for them and to them?
I mean, I really kind of sympathise with how they're feeling, and I understand that. We feel really bad that the hospital should be actually a safe place for them, and now it's become a place of concern. But you know, I'd just like to stress again that we all have PPE. We're washing our hands on a regular basis. We're practicing social distancing, and we're really trying our best to make the hospital a safe environment for them to come. We're triaging women before they come to make sure that they don't have symptoms of COVID. And if they do have symptoms of COVID and they have a non-urgent appointment, then, obviously we'll reschedule that. And anyone who does come in with symptoms of COVID is, taken to a different area away from, women without symptoms.
Will every woman be allowed to have somebody with them?
In labour?
Yes.
Yes.
So a partner, your mum, your sister, whoever it might be?
Yes, well, I think the advice is that if your partner has symptoms, then you can choose another birth partner. But certainly at the moment, we would say that you can have one birth partner with you.
Leah, what about in Glasgow?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think all hospitals and birth units in the UK are following the guidance from the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists, which everyone can access online. And those guidelines say that, yes, absolutely, women should be allowed and encouraged to have one birth partner with them in labour. Obviously, as Kenga has said, if that designated partner is symptomatic, they'll be discouraged from coming. But of course, you can choose someone else who's healthy and well.
Thank you. Tish on Twitter says, my grandson was born by emergency unplanned caesarean on Saturday. I will never be able to thank the NHS enough for the care and the safety of my daughter and her baby. Of course, I haven't seen them other than online, and it hurts not being hands-on to help. Well, Tish, congratulations to you and your daughter, and welcome to the world to your grandson. Another listener says, I'm at home with a three-year-old and a three-week-old. Mixed feelings. Other half is furloughed and now on paternity leave, so it has been a wonderful extended family time. I'm less anxious now the baby is here. The biggest fear was catching the virus before the birth. A partner returns to work and three-year-old to nursery on Monday, and I will really miss the social support. Keep your experiences and your thoughts coming, and if you have a question for either Kenga or Leah, it's a good opportunity to get something off your chest now at BBC Woman's Hour on Twitter. Let's talk now to some women who have just recently given birth, and our congratulations to them all. We're starting with Laura, who is with baby Arthur in Brighton. Laura, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, Jane. Very well, thank you.
This is your second child.
It is. I have a six-year-old here as well with me.
Right, okay. So take us through the birth then. What happened?
So I, at 37 weeks on my maternity leave, which I had planned to relax and really enjoy myself, all of a sudden COVID-19 reared its ugly head, and I was there homeschooling a six-year-old as well. And I had planned to go to the hospital, but with COVID in full swing, I didn't feel comfortable going to hospital for a couple of reasons. The first is that we're down here in Brighton. The rest of our family are in Essex, and my father is in the vulnerable category. So it wasn't advisable for us to have my mum, who I had planned, to come down and look after Ned, my oldest, whilst I was birthing. We have a lot of very, very kind neighbours, but again, they've got young children, they've got vulnerable people in their family, so we didn't want to put anybody at risk, which would have meant I would have to go to the hospital alone and birth. So I was more comfortable to do that at home. So at 37 weeks, made the decision to have a home birth.
Right. Now, would you have considered yourself, I've got to try and phrase this politely, the sort of woman who would ordinarily have gone for a home birth? And I'm looking at my producer, who had two home births. She's pulling faces at me, but you go on.
So I was vehemently against home birth because my first was born, he was born prematurely. There were complications and it was very, very difficult. So I had felt that being in a hospital was the safest place for when things do go wrong, as they had done with my first birth, and that would be the place that I needed to be. I was not somebody that was, enjoying things like hypnobirthing or open to them even. And then at 37 weeks, when I made this decision, it was almost, go back to your brownie days and be prepared because everything's changing thick and fast and I have to have a home birth now. So I have to start thinking differently and changing my perspective. And I did follow a home birth, a hypnobirthing course. And I have to say, it really did open my eyes and change my perspective enormously. Yeah.
We've got so many other callers to squeeze into the programme. But in short, you became the sort of woman you didn't know you were. And for you, using hypnobirthing and giving birth at home was the right thing and it worked well.
It was. It's the most positive experience. My labour was 4 hours and I was at home with my husband was there. My son was there. He was in and out. So it was just very, very comfortable. The midwives and the NHS have done an incredible job of keeping us safe, keeping us calm and helping us to feel really, really secure during the birth.
Well, I'm delighted for you all. And thank you very much for talking to us, Laura. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Worcestershire and Kate. Hi, Kate. Good morning to you.
Hi.
This was your first baby, River. When was
yes.
she born?
6 weeks ago.
Right. And how are things now?
Yeah, good. Yeah, she's good.
She's good. How are you? I'm sounding like your health visitor. How are you feeling in yourself, Kate?
I'm a little bit jealous of the last caller because my labour was certainly a lot longer than 4 hours. Yeah, so, okay. Yeah, I'm super jealous.
Well, no, but Laura acknowledged herself that she was extremely fortunate and we need to get some positivity out there. I know things were not as easy for you, so take me through it.
So I was part of a trial called the Big Baby Trial. So they knew that River was going to be big and she was going to be difficult to get out. And I was being advised to have a C-section, which wasn't my preferred option, actually, to start with. But then I was about 37 weeks then when COVID and lockdown and everything happened, and it actually changed my opinion. And I thought, right, kind of we'll get that done, go for the C-section. And then a bit of protocol, a bit of understaffing at the hospital. And unfortunately, that was kind of that option got taken away from me. And that gave me a lot of anxiety at the time. And then eventually I went into labour and it was very stop start and 4 days and I was admitted. And then I had to have an induction and I was 11th hour into the induction and ended up having an emergency C-section.
Right. And how was that and how has life been since?
So I think the difficult thing with that was that they weren't sure really about protocol, and it was midnight. And the doctors were arguing about whether my husband could see the baby or not afterwards. And we eventually got 10 minutes together. And he left and I got whisked off to postnatal ward for 2 days.
Right.
And I wasn't really ready to go home, but I just couldn't cope with the fact that he hadn't seen his newborn. It was really upsetting. So ended up getting out eventually. But I think one of the positives is that because my recovery's been really difficult, I've had 6 weeks where I haven't had to see anyone, haven't had to have anyone over to the house. And that's been so positive for us.
It's really interesting you say that. We've had a variety of opinions on this very subject. Some wholeheartedly agree with you. Other people, frankly, and it's this visceral longing for their mother, which is coming through from people who haven't been able to see their mother and really miss having that influence and that presence in their life. But there is another side to it. As you say, you actually have enjoyed the cocoon.
Yeah, definitely. And I think my husband's been on furlough as well, which I think at first when that happened, you know, we were really stressed out. I think the last thing you want to be doing is worrying about money when you're having a baby. I'd lost my job 3 weeks before the labour as well.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
So, you know, that would have normally been quite a stressful situation. But I think with everything that's going on, sort of, it's almost like money's become the least of our worries in a way.
Well, it puts absolutely everything into a wonderful perspective, doesn't it?
Mm.
And River's very quiet. Where is she?
Husband has taken her out because she's generally not very quiet.
Well, I should
so
hope
she's
not.
She's gone for a walk down the lane.
Has she? Okay. And how's the feeding going?
Yeah, good. Yeah, good. She was big, so she was hungry. So it's just, yeah, pretty constant, but to be expected.
Okay, congratulations to you all. Thank you very much for coming on the programme this morning.
Thanks.
So Laura in Brighton, Kate in Worcestershire, we're going to go to London and Lizzie. And Lizzie, I don't want to paraphrase your story. It's a relatively complicated one. So I'll just say that you did end up giving birth alone in terms of no intimate partner or friend or mum with you. Just take me through that if you can, Lizzie.
Yeah, certainly. So I have a toddler at home, and my husband and I had talked extensively about what we were going to do when it became clear that I would be having our second daughter under lockdown. And although we knew that during active labour, obviously partners were permitted, what was quite clear was that those on whom we'd normally rely to look after our toddler, it just wasn't going to be feasible. So, you know, parents, etc. So we decided that the most straightforward thing to do would be for me to go in at the point that I was in active labour, if it was circumstances where we could possibly call on a friend to come over for an hour or two to look after our daughter, great. But the option A was very much going to be that my husband was going to stay at home with our toddler. We were actually primarily concerned about her. As it turned out, my waters actually broke early, and so that cemented the decision even more. And I, my labour didn't progress with sufficient pace, so I was admitted to hospital. And given, obviously, with an induction, you don't quite know when you're going to go into active labour. Again, it was just, it didn't seem particularly logical at the time for my husband to be with me. And given that I had an uncomplicated history, yeah, then I just possibly naively thought I'd be in and out, basically.
We should congratulate baby Bibi on making her national radio debut. She is very, very young, but that was brilliant and indescribably cute. So the nation will have enjoyed that, I can assure you. Make sure someone gives this to her when she's 21. But we should say that you actually ended up, well, it was pretty terrifying, actually, wasn't it? You gave birth, and then what happened?
So I gave birth, and I should say that the staff, midwives, obstetricians were amazing throughout the delivery, to the extent they allowed me to FaceTime my husband and indeed my mother, godmothers of my daughters, to give me encouragement before I started going into stage two of labour, so the active pushing. Called my husband straight after delivery, FaceTimed, you know, the sight of his newborn daughter, and then things started to go a bit wrong. I didn't quite appreciate at the time, I think, how serious it was, but in short, I had an undiagnosed pulmonary embolism, so a blood clot in my lung, and it had put pressure on my heart, obviously, during the pushing stage of delivery, such that my heart had gone into distress. And what became apparent afterwards is that I'd had what they call a cardiac event, so effectively a sort of mini heart attack during delivery.
I think so much of what the women have already said on the programme has been so fantastically understated and calm. I just want to own, and I want you to own the fact that you've been in labour on your own in hospital for any number of hours, and then this happened, and you contacted, I think, your best friend and your mum because you thought you were going to die.
Yes, so this was actually, I should say, I didn't want to worry my husband, who has... Oh, sorry, I think this is just... This is Bibi.
It's absolutely fine. Please don't worry about that.
So I had actually, I'd said to my husband everything was fine and you should go to bed because by this point it was midnight and he'd been looking after our daughter all day. And it got to about 2:30 in the morning. It was quite clear they'd asked for my consent to give me a CAT scan or CT scan rather, in the same scan as they was using for COVID victims. But obviously there's risks attached to that, so they needed my consent. And it was quite clear from the very delicate way in which the obstetrician was trying to explain to me that I was effectively dying and they needed to work out why. And it was at that point that I didn't really know what to do. And I just remember, it was very interesting what one of your earlier callers said about wanting your mother. I just wanted to hear my mother's voice. So I sent her a text message asking if she was awake. She knew I was in labour and she went back going, yes. And I rang her and I just said, oh, I just wanted a quick chat, just wanted to talk to you. And she quickly clocked that I was not in a postnatal ward, that there was something going on. And, you know, at that point, I sort of told her what was happening, and she was very reassuring. And again, you know, first thing the next morning, I called my husband and tried calmly to tell him what was happening. And he equally was incredibly reassuring, but I would say that I think it was utterly terrifying for him, for my mother, for my best friends. It was probably more scary for them than it necessarily was for me on the whole during the experience.
Yes. Well, you say that. I'm not sure whether anybody listening will necessarily. You've been through such a lot, Lizzie, and I want to congratulate you, obviously, for coming through all this. You are all right. And
I
if
am.
You just stay with us. I just want to bring Kenga in, our obstetrician. What happened to Lizzie? It was unusual, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's very unusual. And, you know, it's a good thing that they picked it up very quickly and found the underlying cause, so they were able to treat it properly. But yes, I agree, it must be completely terrifying for her, and she sounds very, very brave, and, you know, to go through all that alone, and her poor husband as well, you know, and family at home who then can't be there with her. It's, yeah, you know, yeah, I feel really, my kind of empathies go to you.
Yes, we should say, actually, Kenga, you've had a child yourself recently. It's not as if you're speaking, looking far back in time. I think you have an 18-month-old, don't you?
Yes, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So all this is pretty raw for anybody who's been through this recently. I know you haven't gone through anything like Lizzie's experience. Lizzie, how is life now in terms of, previous contributors have mentioned that idea of a cocoon. Have you been able to establish that?
Yes, absolutely. And I just want to add as well that whilst my experience was, you know, with hindsight, terrifying, the NHS staff were absolutely unbelievable in the way in which they cared for me and were just so nurturing. And I certainly didn't feel alone at any point during the time that I was in hospital without my husband, which is saying quite a lot. So I would just say to any woman who is looking forward to the birth of their child that regardless of things getting complicated, they've got absolutely nothing to fear in terms of the type of care they're going to receive. But in terms of afterwards, yes, absolutely. I mean, it's been very upsetting, obviously, that my, you know, my mother, and father-in-law, and our immediate family and friends can't come and see our daughter, and certainly us. But I have been able to, for example, breastfeed quite successfully when I wasn't so successful first time around with my daughter. And
oh,
I
well,
think
that's good.
Down to
that's interesting.
Just time and being able to be at home.
Yeah, but without over-egging it, we need to make the point that that mother, the mother you rang when you thought you were dying, has still not seen you since.
She said she didn't want to see us because she'd get too upset because she wouldn't be able to come anywhere near us. But she did drop over a few essential items last week, and she saw her from the gate, but literally fleetingly, and found it very, very distressing. But certainly my mother and father-in-law haven't seen her yet. So all of that is yet to come. But we're trying to be positive about it. And if anything, it's something for people to look forward to, if anything.
Yeah, well, that's very true. Lizzie, thank you so much. This is a lovely email, and it's a positive one from Gemma, who just wants to talk about her experience at the University Hospital of Wales. 3 weeks ago, I gave birth to my beautiful baby girl. I arrived at 7:25, and she was in the world by 7:52. My husband just about made it. I never felt alone. I never felt compromised. I never felt intimidated by PPE, because the incredible staff at UHW supported me every step of the way. They explained everything, why the PPE was necessary. They made me laugh and feel like I was in a room of people I'd known my whole life rather than just encountered. We need some good positive stuff out there, and that's a ringing endorsement for everybody at the University Hospital of Wales. Right, we're all feeling quite emotional, even me, and I'm as hard as nails. Let's bring in Frankie. Frankie, good morning to you.
Morning.
Tell me a little bit about this is your second baby, and what happened, Frankie?
Well, despite the lockdown and everything, I don't have any... I think it was quite straightforward. So I was nearly 40 weeks when the government said there was a lockdown. And I just remember I was being induced. So it was a Friday. And I went into hospital to be induced. And the maternity ward was sectioned off. So I thought, okay, that's a bit... I didn't... But I always have saying this before, even during any appointments or anything, even though I knew COVID was going on, I didn't feel unsafe in the hospital.
Good.
Whatsoever. I always felt safe. It was always at the back of my mind, but I felt fine. So I went into the hospital to be induced, and after a couple of hours, they said my basically nothing was progressing, and my son's heart rate was dropping, so I would have to probably have a section. So this was about 11 p.m. at night. But however, obviously at night, there's not a lot of staff there. So they told me they may not be able to do it. They're quite short staff, so they're not sure. So they came back to me and said they'll prefer to do it in the morning when they have a full team available. So then I had to wait till the morning to have a section. And that's when my section was scheduled in for, because they didn't have enough staff. But I think that would have happened any other day because it was a night shift anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important to say that some of these experiences would have happened regardless of COVID-19, I guess.
Yeah.
But has your recovery been all right? And you have another child, so that must be tough, looking after it.
I have a two-year-old toddler. So after my section, they actually discharged me the next day, which I would say probably wasn't the best thing to do, because my first week of being at home, I was in so much pain and literally wasn't mobile. I had a toddler. My husband was amazing. He was there as well. We literally had to take camp in our living room because I couldn't climb my stairs or anything. And my son is nearly 8 weeks now, and I've only actually seen a midwife once.
So, right.
Which I think it's a negative. So I've had loads of phone calls, but I don't know if you think back to anyone who's listening who's a mum, we can all say we're okay when we're not.
Well,
but if you see my face, you know, you'd be able to tell if there was something wrong with me.
I think that's a very important point. Let's put that to Kenga, because you do deal in perinatal mental health, Kenga. How is that being dealt with right now? The idea that in the old days a health visitor would have that, well, the question was always, how are you feeling in yourself? What would you say to women like Frankie?
Yeah, I completely agree that, you know, Frankie, that's a really difficult experience for you. And I think you miss, with part of the problem with telephone conversations is that you miss the body language, you know, the facial expressions. Mm-hmm. And we've found that as well. And that's why we've tried to go on to other kind of virtual platforms to talk to women, but also be able to see them, you know, postnatally to look at the baby. And I really try my best to say to women, look, there is no pressure to talk on the phone. If you want to come in and see me in person, or you want a different kind of appointment, or you want to do a virtual platform, then please feel welcome to. You know, part of us doing telephone conversations is protection for the women, because you know, when this all first started, women didn't want to come to hospital.
Sure.
But certainly if you want the contact, the physical contact, then you know, midwives can come to your house if it's necessary with PPE on, or you know, you can come to the hospital, you know, if you need to. And we really do understand that that's something that we need to work on, is that, you know, we miss with telephone conversations all the other things that are kind of, you know, indicators that people might be struggling.
Yeah.
Kenga, thank you very much. Leah, what about your situation in Glasgow? That the whole point of seeing people, meeting people in the flesh, we're all missing people right now, all of us, but it's so important in that immediate post-birth period, isn't it?
It is so important. And I think, you know, understandably, we've been talking about hospitals as places of physical safety, and the top priority has to be to maintain infection control and stop more women and their families getting sick. However, there's also emotional safety, and that's a huge factor of which midwives are aware. And we must be aware that face-to-face meetings and just that immediate visceral contact can contribute to a sense of emotional safety and well-being for women, and we mustn't lose sight of that. And certainly, as Kenga has said, that there have been some shortcomings because of the other measures we've had to put in place, but as midwives, we really should keep women's emotional safety at the front of our minds as well, and we're doing our very best to do that all the time.
Is there a slight danger that more of this postnatal care in particular might move online after this is all over? Because I think perhaps some health experts might regard the current situation as working rather well, when in fact, as Frankie illustrates, sometimes it's actually not that easy to tell the truth via Zoom or on FaceTime. You want to be with someone, you want to see them.
I think the short answer to that question of will it all move online, at least from my personal point of view, is I hope not. I mean, I think we all recognise now from lockdown that there are some, you know, basic logistical tasks and very simple conversations that we can have well online and we can have well over the phone. But there really is no substitute if you're really providing holistic women-centered care. There's no substitute for seeing a woman, for picking up on her body language, for reading her facial cues, and for just having that immediate physical rapport in the room. So yes, you know, certainly there are ways that maybe the service can be streamlined and changed in the future for the better. But I think we would lose the real art and craft and essence of midwifery if we just put it all online.
Kinga, what advice would you give to any woman who has given birth recently and is feeling low? What would you say to them?
So I would first of all say that, you know, talk it out with, you know, whoever they can, you know, whether that be, you know, on the telephone or Zoom, you know, talk to your friends and family about your feelings. And you know, some of the kind of antenatal groups, postnatal groups have got online platforms, and you'll often find that there are lots of other women in the same situation as you. If you feel that these, you know, symptoms are more concerning, or your partner's noticed a change, or, you know, another family member who lives with you has noticed a change, then, you know, please highlight that to your midwife or health visitor and escalate it. And, you know, some of the symptoms to look out for, especially in the postnatal period, is, you know, if you're not feeling, you know, a bond with your baby, if you're, you know, not, obviously we're not, no one's really sleeping in the postnatal period, but, you know, if you feel that you're kind of waking up with anxiety, you're not, your appetite is reduced, these kind of issues, then I think that, you know, you need to seek help and get assessed.
And in,
can
I, we just, I knew we wouldn't have time for everything. We haven't mentioned feeding, but if you could just offer a couple of words of wisdom on that, Kinga. Put it in perspective. If whichever method you're using isn't working out for you, don't give yourself a hard time.
Yes, I think that the message, even out of the COVID time, is that, you know, as the baby is fed and that you stay sane is the kind of, you know, end message, I would say. And there is a lot of advice on the UNICEF UK baby friendly website about breastfeeding and bottle feeding. But, you know, really, you know, just need to keep the baby healthy and yourself physically and mentally healthy.
That is the very wise voice of Kinga Sivaraja, obstetrician. And you also heard in that programme from Leah Hazard, who is a midwife in Glasgow, and from those amazing listeners as well. In order of appearance, Elsa and Ibby, Laura, Kate, Lizzie and Frankie. And we thank them all and congratulate them all as well, of course. Right, so much to squeeze in terms of your reaction to what you heard. Let's try and do justice to the absolute extraordinary cascade of love for the people who spoke on the programme that came in, and to all the shades of opinion on everything that was heard. But a lot of you just wanted to say the fantastic, and it was, it's awe-inspiring courage from some of those women who are, as I kept saying during the programme, just so understated about everything that they've been through. This is a listener who's a grandmother. Her name is Elaine. I haven't seen my second daughter since February, and she's been very ill during her pregnancy. A very much longed for baby, she says. We can't meet, although she only lives just over an hour away from me. And although I've asked, she doesn't feel we can meet until after the baby has been born at some point in the future. Her husband hasn't been able to go to scans with her, and whether he can be with her at the birth is another unknown. I think he will be able to be with her in the birth, by the way. But anyway, I completely understand how important it is to keep everybody safe. But the loneliness of living alone and not being able to see adult children at this time is very real, says Elaine, who's a grandmother who naturally is very concerned. This is from another woman who says, I am profoundly deaf, but my mum listens to Woman's Hour, and I thought I would like to tell you what it's like being pregnant and deaf right now. When I do go to the hospital or clinic, I have a British Sign Language interpreter, but this has been very difficult as I also rely on lip reading, and obviously this isn't possible when the interpreter is wearing a normal mask due to the hospital policy. So I've requested my interpreters to wear a plastic face visor. Requests for video links with interpreters have been refused as the hospital doesn't have the technology, and it doesn't seem possible to have text messages. I am now being sent letters, which is a step in the right direction. While individual staff have mostly been very kind, it's been a struggle to get anything like the same level of support as a hearing person. I'll be on my own when I give birth, as my partner is going to be looking after our daughter, and I'm trying to get hold of a see-through mask for my interpreter so that I can really understand what is happening. Mostly, I managed to overcome the challenges that come with deafness with the support of family and interpreters, but the virus has made this pregnancy and its difficulties much harder and more isolating than usual. Well, I mean, that is an experience that, to my shame, I hadn't even considered. So thank you to that person for telling us about that. And I'm sure somebody will come to your aid and make sure that you get the help you need when you give birth. This anonymous listener says, my well wishes to all of the speakers you had on today, their bravery in talking about their experiences on national radio. I was in tears at the experience of the lady who talked about her near-death experience and the instinctive feeling of just wanting to talk to her mother and her best friend at that hour and not wanting to worry her husband. Life perhaps can't be more fragile in that moment, so I'm so glad she's all right and it turned out well. I hope she gets to see her mum and her family properly soon. From Sarah, my seventh granddaughter was born on the 24th of March. I still haven't seen her or held her. My son lives over 250 miles from me. I think that because obviously we're adhering to government guidelines and I might not see her until she's 6 months old. Unless, of course, says Sarah, I put on a beanie hat. Well, that's Sarah for you. I don't need to say any more. Well, I can't say any more other than that, but thank you for that. My view on being pregnant at this time, says another listener, is that it's very difficult for a first-time mother, especially when your partner isn't able to go to antenatal appointments with you. This can make you feel very lonely and without support. I am 4 months pregnant and have yet to meet my midwife. With the apparent relaxation of the lockdown, do you think there might come a point when partners are allowed to attend appointments? Oh, I don't know the answer to that, but we must say, of course, that, and it was made clear during the programme, the listeners, Lizzie in particular, who did give birth alone, you wouldn't be expected to do that. That was a decision that she made because she felt that her partner was better off at home with her other child. But in general, you would be allowed to have somebody with you whilst you give birth, of course. This is from Sophie. I gave birth to a beautiful daughter on the 8th of May. And she is beautiful and perfect, but it's really hard being new parents in a pandemic. This is on our Instagram account. We moved last summer to be near my parents and older sister for family support. I cry every day because my mum's heart is breaking, not being able to hold her new granddaughter, and it's a struggle to keep on top of the house with a colicky newborn. Under normal circumstances, my mum would have helped us out with these jobs or just held the baby while I did other things. Whilst I cannot praise NHS staff enough for doing their best, I do feel really adrift without any in-person visit from a health visitor. I'm looking at my baby and being asked whether her eyes are clear and bright, and it's difficult. I think they are, but I don't have other babies to compare her to. My milk hasn't come in either, and the guilt is really intense. I've got questions about formula feeding, but I've got no one to ask. I know I'm in a position of huge privilege to have these worries and to have my healthy baby, but this isn't what I imagine for myself or for my daughter. Sophie, it's difficult to hear that from you, and I hope you're okay. And I appreciate when you sent this message to Instagram, it was a couple of days ago, so I hope things have got slightly better for you. But Kenga Sivaraja, our obstetrician, was so clear at the end of the programme. She said, sanity is what matters. You do what you can in terms of feeding. So please do be reassured by that thought and that advice, which is was very sincerely meant, believe me, from Kenga, who, as I say, had her second child only very recently. She's only 18 months old, that child. What's this? It's from a listener who says, I had my first baby 4 weeks ago. I'm a single mum. I have found it incredibly difficult to negotiate the early weeks on my own and come to terms with the lack of sleep. I have many supportive friends who would love to come over and help me look after the baby to give me some rest, and it feels so unfair not to be able to take them up on their offers. My mother's in Spain and couldn't come, obviously. I feel isolated and I've struggled with thoughts and feelings around the birth and having a baby that I think I would have come to terms with more easily had I been able to get out. Well, there we are. That's another slice of life right now. The listener does go on to say, my midwife has been brilliant and the resources for struggling breastfeeders are abundant. So I do feel like if I am struggling, there are professionals I can turn to. And as a result, we have successfully negotiated some stressful difficulties with breastfeeding. Well, good. That sounds like a positive. From Fiona, I'm finding this all very difficult. It's my first baby. I feel very removed from my pregnancy, as if it isn't really happening. I'm 19 and a half weeks pregnant and I'm due for my second scan this week, which again, my husband can't come to. My first scan felt almost shameful. I was alone in a waiting room with another young woman and had no one to calm my nerves. My sonographer scoffed at my request to video call my husband during the scan so he could feel part of it. She didn't seem to understand why I wanted him to experience it with me. She just said he'll be able to be here for the next one. I won't be having another child, so I felt this was insensitive. I didn't feel any of the joy and the wonder you hear about during these scans. I was just really upset. Well, Fiona, I'm sorry about that. And that's a negative experience, a relative rarity, but nevertheless, it was real for Fiona and it shouldn't have happened. Tom says, my beautiful partner Anna gave birth to our impossibly perfect little boy, Rupert, on Wednesday after a 50-hour labour. 50-hour labour. Due to COVID, I had to leave 2 hours after the birth and I haven't been able to visit since. While listening to your programme, I received the news today that I'm able to get them both from hospital. I cannot express my joy. Oh, God, I'm almost in tears here. I cannot express my joy. Today, my new life begins, says Tom. Oh, Tom, you won't get a wink of sleep tonight, or indeed the next night, or indeed the night after that. But congratulations to you, and how brilliant. And our best wishes and lots of love to Anna and to Perfect Rupert. The very, very best of luck to you all. Heather, on Saturday, my lovely daughter-in-law gave birth to our second beautiful granddaughter in London. We live in Belfast. I know it'll be some time before we get to see her. How I long for that day when I can hold and cuddle her. In the meantime, I'm treasuring every photograph and video. This is from Yvonne. I had my first baby at 8:30 in the morning on the first day of lockdown, which I think was March the 24th. I think that was right. It all seems like a distant dream, doesn't it? But I think it was March the 24th. Anyway, it's from Yvonne, who goes on. We live in Orkney. Sadly, my baby Theo had breathing difficulties and was in an air ambulance overnight to Aberdeen neonatal unit. My husband and I were unable to go on the flight with him and had to wait until the following day. We got home after a week, but it was so scary having to fly with a newborn who had had respiratory problems when corona affects breathing. He still hasn't met anybody apart from his parents, and we are missing out on so many bonding opportunities as there are no classes, etc. Yvonne, congratulations to you. What an experience, and our very best wishes to you all. The one thing I can say is that what we do know is that in 2040, baby Theo will be a lumbering 20-year-old, and you'll try to tell him about what happened in 2020. And he won't be interested. Well, that's something I hope is a comfort to you, because we've all got our birth stories. And in my experience, and it might just be me, they're not interested when you try to tell them how terrifying it all was when they first entered the world. But still, you know what happened. And it must have been quite a thing for you and your husband. And honestly, that's really tough. This is from Dr. Sarah Fry. In the maternity unit where I work, we've made many changes to the way we deliver our services in order to maintain social distancing. We have been doing many of our obstetrician antenatal clinic consultations by telephone. This has been a great success and well received by our expectant mothers, who find a phone call more convenient than having to come to the hospital and sit in the waiting room for an appointment that's normally running late. We're collecting data on these clinics at the moment, but based on their apparent success, we are likely to carry on using more telephone consultations in the future, even when the pandemic has passed. Well, that's interesting. It's something I did mention in the programme, and I suppose my concern would be that, I don't know, is everybody happy with doing all this on the phone? I'm just not sure. And so I'm asking women who've been on the receiving end of such consultations to let us know what they think. I know everybody's different, but I just wonder whether that is entirely satisfactory for everybody. And from Isabel, it's so interesting hearing about mothers' birth experiences during lockdown, particularly as our daughter has just gone into labour a couple of hours ago. We await her news with a mix of anxiety and anticipation. Many thanks for your programme. Well, Isabel, you've left us all hanging there, so I hope you can get back in touch with the programme and let us know how your daughter gets on and what happens. But in the meantime, fingers crossed that everything goes well. I'm sure it will go well, and congratulations to you. We could go on, but we just can't. We're not allowed to, because somebody apparently other people use this studio. I find that so... I mean, why? It's mine. It's ours. We're back tomorrow with more Woman's Hour, and thank you so much for taking part today. I really enjoyed it, and I know a lot of other people found it very moving as well. We're back tomorrow.
Hi, my name's Jarvis Cocker, and I'm here to tell you about Wireless Nights, a nocturnal investigation into the human condition. A collection of stories about the night and the people who come alive after dark. From nightclubs to night rail, from the man in the moon to the land of the midnight sun. Join me and discover a different kind of nightlife. All episodes now available on the BBC Sounds app.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Collider says BritBox has TV everyone should be watching. Stream acclaimed series with powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey, and Matthew McFadyen. Discover new BritBox original series you won't find anywhere else. Like Three Little Birds, Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy, and a new chapter of BAFTA-winning drama, Time. Stream what the New York Times calls the best of British telly, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.